Baseball is back. The 2025 MLB season is upon us. So what's the easiest way to keep up with all the big stars, top scores, and fun storylines from the night before? What's the solution? Is there a secret?
Chocolate milk and squats. That's the secret.
Not quite, Pete, but there is the Morning Lineup Podcast, a quick, less than 10-minute morning highlight show from MLB. It airs Mondays through Fridays on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You bring the chocolate milk, we'll bring the baseball news.
Stretch run of Grant and Danny will take you up to 6:30 on The Fan. Show's brought to you today and every day by our friends, the law firm Condori and Murad. They will get you squared away with the important and not fun stuff that they make pretty easy. Last will and testament, living trust, medical power of attorney, all those things. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. If you mention us, you'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. PFF dropped a top 25 NFL players under 25 today. Jaden Daniels, not surprisingly, was very high on the list, but I actually thought he'd be higher. He ranked fourth on the top 25 players under 25. Behind Penei Sewell, tackle for the Detroit Lions, Puka Nacua, wide receiver for the Rams, and safety Kyle Hamilton of the Baltimore Ravens. Now, before you start debating where should Jaden be, I want to point out this is based on their PFF grading.
Right.
So this is not arbitrary, or it's not like, well, we think Sewell's, you know, the second best tackle, and maybe Jaden Daniels is the seventh best quarterback, so he's going to be higher. That's not how they did it. It was just their three-year NFL grade for Sewell, which is 92.8. Puka Nacua's three-year grade at receiver is 92.5. Kyle Hamilton's three-year grade is 92.0. And then Jaden Daniels, they give him a three-year grade, but of course it's a season at 90.6. So for him, it's 1,200 snaps. They're comparing against 2,800 for Hamilton, 1,600 for Puka, and 3,700 for Penei Sewell. So it's not a debatable thing in the sense of we slotted him fourth because we think that's where he is. But I find it very curious that 25 players under 25, Washington, of course, has just the one, Jaden Daniels, and they finally have themselves a top fiver.
Yeah, and that's the guy that I think everybody, if you're starting a team, would take in front of those other three guys because the outside's importance of the position. So I'll certainly take that. No issue there. Penei Sewell might be the best tackle in football. There's a debate there, I think, to be had. Nacua's
maybe
incredible.
Right tackle.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to – it's almost interchangeable now. I don't know how you feel about this. I think it's hard to put a right tackle over the great left tackles. But it seems like people care less about which tackle you play anymore.
Well, I mean,
like,
think of the number of edge rushers who are on that side now, out of preference, right? I mean, it's now, it used to be, oh, the blind side. That's where LT's coming from. That's where Derek Thomas is coming from. Now it's, you know, you may find just as many guys coming from that, what would you call that? The strong side or the more visible side?
From the right side.
Yeah, right side, matter of preference.
Lane Johnson, who's played right tackle for years, and it's not like Jordan Mailata's on the dog. I mean, he's a beast now, but the Eagles have kind of run through some left tackles while Lane Johnson's been a mainstay on the right side. And there are some really good ones over the years. I'm not suggesting there haven't been, but it used to be if you were the best right tackle, you were probably slotting in the back end top 10 among tackles in the NFL. That's just not the case. I think you're right. I think if you did a listing or a ranking of offensive tackles in the National Football League, Sewell now would absolutely be in the top 10, even though he plays right tackle.
Yeah, and you know, Nacua's a star, so is Hamilton, some of the best players at their given positions around the league. So, yeah, no issue with this here. And I think that sample is going to, you know, the bigger one's going to be more kind for Jaden Daniels as he advances. I mean, keep in mind, as a rookie, some pretty advanced stuff in the passing game, but also a lot of things to try to make, rightfully so, by the way, to try to make it, let's spoon feed, let's make it easy, let's get a couple completions, let's get a little bit more of a run game. There's going to be a time in the not-too-distant future where it's, all right, dude, it's your show, the whole thing, right? Whether it's passing game or, you know, we saw it in the preseason where he's checking to this downfield throw, but there's going to be more and more advanced passing concepts introduced as he's more and more capable, which is coming.
Do you remember when the Cincinnati Bengals made the pick at number 5 in 2021? It was after Burrow's first season when he got sacked a million times and everyone said, you got to get a lineman, you got to get help and block him. And they were on the clock at 5 and everybody thought they were going to take Penei Sewell. And they took Ja'Marr Chase instead, the wide receiver out of LSU. I think that's one of those rare times where it worked out perfectly.
Everybody got something good.
For both teams, right? Where the Bengals didn't go line. And you could say they needed a better offensive line since then at different points. They've given up a lot of hits on Burrow, a lot of sacks, what have you. But they've also been in a Super Bowl, largely because Ja'Marr Chase is awesome. They've been one of the great offenses in the league because Chase, who they drafted there at five, is special. They just gave him a second contract. But the Lions would rather have had Sewell than Chase, I bet. I mean, he is perfect for their identity. For whatever that Dan Campbell kneecap fighting culture they've created is, Sewell is the face of that operation, basically, at this point. Respect to Jared Goff, their quarterback. Like, Penei Sewell's the guy whose jersey they're wearing there. I think of the Bengals, and Ja'Marr Chase makes a lot more sense for this finesse offense that's drop back, sling it around. They're going to win 40-34 because their defense stinks, right? The Lions are gritty. They're grimy. You know, it's about pounding people, running the football. To me, that worked out perfectly.
I think it did. Yeah, the and Jalen Waddle going in between has had a bunch of injuries, but it's not as if he's a slouch either. But it's funny, the guys that go 5, 6, 7 in this draft, I'd rather have than anybody that went up top. Remember, that was quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. Trevor Lawrence, still jury's still out, has had, but only still one really good season under his belt. Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, worse than that. Kyle Pitts, pretty big disappointment. Isn't that funny? Chase, Waddle, Sewell, the top of that class.
Well, you could keep going. I mean, 5 through 10 in that class were home runs.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Chase to the Bengals. Jalen Waddle to the Dolphins. Now, maybe it's a little bit rich for him at 6, but he's a very, very
really good
player. And I don't think Miami would, you know, maybe you'd go back and you'd rather have Penei Sewell or Patrick Surtain or, you know, some other awesome player from that draft. Micah Parsons, if you did a redraft, would go in the top 3. But I think if you just ask the Dolphins, like, are you okay taking Jalen Waddle 6th overall? They would say, absolutely. He's great.
Yep.
Second contract guy. Then you got Sewell to Detroit at 7. J.C. Horn to the Panthers at 8. Again, maybe that's a little bit rich, but he got a second contract. He's been very good, I think. The home run pick is Patrick Surtain to the Broncos at 9, who now is in the conversation for best corner in football already. The Eagles took Devontae Smith from Alabama 10th. That 2021 draft was awesome.
I think they like that one.
Smith, undersized, tiny, shifty, diminutive from Alabama. I don't know. That's rich. Like, you didn't take Micah Parsons, you could have. You'd probably rather do that. But same question. If you ask the Eagles, are you okay taking Smith at 10? You've played in 2 Super Bowls. You've won a Super Bowl. He's made some huge playoff catches. I bet you they're okay with
Just a playmaking 1,000-yard receiver opposite another playmaking 1,000-yard receiver. You know, give defenses different challenges. We'll take that.
All the quarterbacks in that round, and maybe not Lawrence. Lawrence has been fine. But Wilson to the Jets, 2. Lance to the San Francisco, 3.
Garbage.
Justin Fields to the Bears, 11. Brutal. And then Mac Jones to the Patriots, 15th. Mac Jones probably had the second best run with his team that drafted him.
He had a decent rookie year.
He did. They made the playoffs.
And it all came crashing down.
He actually played well in the playoff game against Buffalo. It was the Bills, right?
That sounds right to me.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster 2-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
That makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm pretty sure he played pretty well in that game and they got blown out because they weren't that good. They were like it was a Belichick defensive led, like 10-7 fake playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, that was a loaded draft. And then the Cowboys got Micah Parsons 12th that year.
Shout out to Christian Darrisaw, who went 23rd, who I wanted. But they took Jamin Davis. So we're all set there.
Yeah, you can't keep the theme going for the Commanders in the first round of that draft at 19. Maybe one of the worst picks of the first round.
Yeah,
a staple of the Ron Rivera era.
Mm. Yeah, but he's thrived elsewhere, hasn't he?
Looking at the top 25 under 25 again. So Sewell goes 1, Nacua 2, Kyle Hamilton 3. Kyle Hamilton's such a good player
with
Baltimore.
He is.
That's another guy, by the way.
Yeah.
Just like Christian Darrisaw.
Yeah.
Where if you just took the consensus player that fans wanted, you would have done a better job. And let's face it, it's not like fans are scouting. They're reading Mel Kiper reports. You know what I mean? They're looking at mock drafts mostly. But how often over a 4-year span for a regime would you have just been better off listening to the people that pay for tickets? People wanted Kyle Hamilton. They said, no, thank you.
We're gonna trade. We'll end up with Jahan Dotson around early. And I can't remember the other person that got in that trade. Was that the Sam Howell deal?
B-Rob, I think, ended up being one of those picks.
Cole Turner.
Cole Turner, yeah. That's another one.
So that's terrific.
He's on the practice squad.
Isn't that fun?
He's in the building.
Yeah, that's my thing. It's like, when I can do it, oh, you should be fired. Like, I could have made that pick. I'd be wrong a ton. I'd be wrong all the time. But I would have picked Kyle Hamilton.
Two running backs here on the 25 under 25 list. Bijan Robinson from the Falcons, who we saw last year in Landover.
He was very comfortable against
us. And Jahmyr Gibbs, who thank God didn't get more carries in the playoffs against Washington. But he ate their lunch in that postseason game whenever he got to touch the football. Wasn't as often as it should have been.
He had a running start, didn't he? get past the line of scrimmage with a full head of steam.
The Lions have Sewell, Brian Branch, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Sam Laporta on this list. Oh, and Kirby Joseph. There's no way he's under 25, is he? I guess he is if PFF has him here. Dude, how about that? The Lions have 5 of the 25 players under 25 in the NFL.
I guess that's pretty good.
I mean, yes, you lose Ben Johnson, and yes, they lost some starters on offense, but with what they've built under GM Brad Holmes, they're going to sustainably be really, really good. That's why when everyone talks about, you know, Washington or anybody else has closed the gap, Green Bay or Minnesota maybe, the Lions...
Just that level of talent, man, everywhere.
They do. They're loaded. Now, do you trust Jared Goff with a different coordinator?
No.
With somebody trying to elevate him? You're going to have to... I personally think you're going to have to find a franchise quarterback in the next year or two, because the Goff thing can work for another couple of seasons like this. But you saw in the playoffs with Washington, he turned the ball over a ton. I think he got picked off 3 times and lost a fumble. You still need to help him a lot. What they'd like, what everybody would, is a quarterback that can drag you into the fight, not someone that you're just hoping you can mask the deficiencies of. And it's hard to have that and all the talent. It'll be a fun little experiment. They've gone with all the talent around him, drafting, developing, they'll spend on those guys. And then you've got Jared Goff at quarterback. But they are still loaded with talent. They're very, very good, very young.
They really are. Yeah, and that to me is the hallmark of it. So yeah, whether they miss Ben Johnson or not, maybe they will at certain points, but they're talented enough just to mess around and win double-digit games again.
Tush Push Week in the NFL. We started the show talking about this. Let's hit a couple NFL headlines on the way out here. So tomorrow and Wednesday is when teams are going to be discussing this at these meetings. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network was on ESPN today with Pat McAfee, and he was talking about what he's hearing on the Tush Push. It does sound like a major change could be coming to that play.
I would say my educated guess is there is a change to the Tush Push. Now, right now, the language has been, I believe, not changed. But I would expect come Tuesday morning or whenever they first kind of introduce things, maybe Tuesday afternoon, there'll probably be some new language aimed at eliminating any player from pushing or pulling another player. Like, not specific to this play, because I'm not sure the league wants to specifically ban this play. It'd be probably more the mechanism that is used in this play. In other words, like Saquon and Goddard and players like that pushing other players. So to me, it feels like there's probably movement there. I think that makes sense, and we'll see where it shakes out on Wednesday.
It's a semantics argument, kind of, to say they're not going to ban the tush push. They're just not going to allow you to do the tush push. But that's kind of what he's saying.
It's a huge point of distinction, though, I think.
Yeah, but what is the tush push? It's a quarterback sneak where you are aiding the quarterback by shoving them from behind. If you're saying that and then in the next sentence saying you're not going to be allowed to shove them from behind anymore, then all you can really do is a quarterback sneak. And if that's the case, the tush push is gone. It's like saying you don't have to leave, but you can't stay here to me. Like, I'm not getting rid of the tush push, but you can't push them in the tush. What the hell is the tush push?
Right.
They're getting rid of the tush push. They just don't want to come out and say they're doing it.
Well, because it's the best case you've made against getting rid of it, if everyone followed that double negative, is it feels like you're just punishing Philadelphia for doing something well. And it feels like sour grapes. And my point is, yeah, to a degree, but the pushing a runner from behind should not be allowed. That's how you solve it. That's how you solve the problem. So it's not just targeting Philadelphia. Right, so you're not just saying, well, the Eagles do this one thing that nobody can stop. And again, my counter to that counter is nobody stops quarterback sneaks either. It's north of 80% effectiveness. Depends on the year. Sometimes you get as high as 90. Sometimes it's as low as like 80 or 81. it is still a wildly effective play that will be wildly effective for Philadelphia, who runs this already unstoppable play with a great offensive line and a quarterback that's strong as an ox. You'll be fine just quarterback sneaking it.
One of the defensive players who was most famous for trying to stop the tush push last year was Commanders linebacker Frankie Louvu, because over and over again on the goal line, he would just jump over the Eagles' offensive line to try to time his leap to tackle Jalen Hurts, to the point where in the NFC Championship game, officials said if he did it again, they would award the Eagles a touchdown. This was Frankie Louvu today on Good Morning Football on NFL Network.
My personal opinion, I think they should bet it, you know what I mean? But I know the argument is going to be about like, hey, you guys have to stop it. Don't get us in short yardage and whatnot. But yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a Chico play, man. You got Jordan Mailata on the right. You got, it's pretty much a scrum in rugby. That's how I kind of look at it. And we got to have a scrum too on the other side. And the scrum is, we have a cadence where we all go at once. It's not like you hard count or and this and that where, now you're getting us or myself jumping over the pile thinking that they're about to snap the ball. And that's just my own personal opinion, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Basically suggesting they got all these advantages, you got to give us one too. You can't have multiple snap counts. You just got to go on one. They're not doing that. They're not going to even the playing field for the defense. The only way that they can even the playing field is by not allowing this play at all. And it sounds like that is what's going to happen. They're going to use semantics to do it, but you're not going to be allowed to shove a player forward if Ian Rappaport's right and that's how the vote comes down this week at these meetings in West Palm Beach. My question is, what is the wording? Are we getting rid of pulling players over the goal line, which is now okay? Mm-hmm. Are we getting rid of the linemen that come flying into the TV frame to blow up a running back up who's being held up by a defender to knock him forward 2 or 3 yards with momentum? I think you got to get rid of all of that if you're getting rid of the push.
That's my view. Yep, I think that's what should happen. The old sort of John Runyon Memorial spear defenseless players type stuff. I want out of the game.
So I want to talk more about this tomorrow, Danny, but another of the big sticking points in conversations at the meetings this week is going to be the possibility of changing how we seed the NFL playoffs.
So this is long been discussed and now seems to have some momentum. It depends on who you ask, but it's basically that instead of the division winner automatically being the higher seed, it now turns to record. That's all that matters. So you don't go on the road if you have, say, a 9-8 division winner versus a 12-5 wildcard team. The 12-5 team hosts the game. Wild card, division winner, doesn't matter. You still have automatic entry for division winners, which I love, but this is kind of the best in both worlds. And the part two of this is you reseed after every round, which I think is the way to go about it.
I love this. This is a long time overdue for me. I know a lot of people think winning the division has to be as valuable as possible. And I think getting an automatic bid to the playoffs is plenty valuable. I think coaches will hate this. Every coach I've ever covered, interacted with, dealt with, loves this idea of prioritizing division games more. They all use the same mantra, slogan, adage, axiom, whatever you're using, which is, if we win the division, we get a home playoff game, and that would go away. But enough with the Ron Rivera, both with the Panthers and here in Washington in 2020, 7-win division champion of the worst division in years, who then gets to host a 10-11-win playoff team. That's ridiculous. So the best team should be seeded highest to lowest. You get in automatically. If you're a 4-win division champion, you still get to make the playoffs. You just don't get to host the game. I think it makes conference games more important. Everyone's going to focus on, well, doesn't this water down division games? Not really. Every game's significant. It's going to make the Washington-Detroit game more important, the Washington-Minnesota game more important, because if you're a wild card team and you are playing another club who in the second round is a wild card team who had the better record, that's where you're going. I think this is a very, very good thing for the NFL.
So the reason why I think this one's going to pass, I still don't know about the tush push. I'm hopeful, but I don't know. The reason why I think this one will work is with the new playoff format. Try to follow me on this. You're going to have more games with this current format, not the better record gets the home field. You'll have more meaningless games potentially with the bad division winner, right? The NFC South division gets wrapped up for the sake of argument. If Atlanta finished 7-10, Tampa's only 10-7, but they're probably done the week before because they beat Atlanta twice. I'm just making this up, right? Versus if every game matters for home field, I think you're going to see more pedal to the metal for longer in the season. I think that's the reason it's going to pass. I think that's the argument that's going to be more compelling to the owners. You cannot have too many meaningless games, and they've added that seventh team to the postseason to try to prevent that. I think this is the next step where, you know, you got the division wrapped up, you got the 2 seed wrapped up, or the 4 seed wrapped up, or whatever it is. They'll probably be less wrapped up heading into the final weeks of the season, where you had a Detroit at 15-2, Minnesota at 14-3, Philadelphia 14-3. The various records will be that much closer, where you go, listen, I got the 2 seed no matter what because I'm a division winner. The wild card team is going to be 5. That's that. You won't have that anymore. You'll have more competitive games.
Lastly, huge contract doled out today in the NFL by the San Francisco 49ers. They got the Brock Purdy deal done, their quarterback of their offense, last week. Now it's the quarterback of the defense's turn. Fred Warner getting a 3-year deal, $63 million, $21 million AAV, the highest paid off-ball linebacker in the National Football League. Remember, it was 265 over 5 with 181 mil in guarantees for Purdy. Record-breaking contract for them with a quarterback. Now, they're giving a guy who had no guaranteed money left $95 million in guarantees in the last 2 contracts between him and Purdy given out here over the next couple of seasons. But no guaranteed money left for Warner, who's playing week in and week out as their heart and soul. They didn't want him to go into the season like that. Oftentimes, that's the beginning of the end between 2 players and ends up leaving the following year. 4-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro, maybe the best linebacker in the league. He's been a first-team All-Pro 3 straight years for the last 5. Fred Warner gets paid $21 million per year at that position. You just changed the way that linebackers are going to be paid for years to come, so good for him.
Yeah, he's a star. San Francisco's in such a weird spot right now, where they're kind of having to shed a couple of guys. See Debo Samuel leaving and maybe some others.
They're definitely reworking that roster.
Yeah, but they've got several, by my count, quick and dirty, 4 or 5 Hall of Fame-type guys making top dollar. Then they just add Ayuk to that, a huge deal last year, and now Brock Purdy to it as well, to go with like Trent Williams, Warner, Kittle, McCaffrey might be a candidate if he has a couple more healthy seasons. But just kind of amazing where they are, and people are more bullish on them maybe than you and me.
Busy day in the NFL. More of it, I'm sure, as the meetings kick off tomorrow. Tomorrow on Grant and Danny, got a great show planned for you. 3 p.m. in studio, Robert White. Council member in Washington, D.C.
Maybe 4 p.m. congressman?
Tickets to Offspring at Jiffy Lube Live. 5 p.m., Jordan Tamu, quarterback, defenders. They're playoff bound. He'll be in studio with us, and we're expected to catch up tomorrow with the GM of the Capitals, Chris Patrick, for a look back at the season, look ahead to the offseason as well. So you'll want to be listening starting at 2 o'clock. Big thanks to Darius, Ryan, Toby, everybody for their hard work on the show. For Danny, I'm Grant, saying so long. Linnell's got overtime coming up next on The Fan.
Thank you for coming.
This sports update is brought to you by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, home of Ted Britt for life. There is no doubt surrounding Nick Sirianni's status on the Philadelphia Eagles sideline this year. Sirianni fresh off leading the franchise to its 2nd Super Bowl victory, and the Eagles have agreed to terms on a multi-year contract extension. No numbers have come out on that yet, but we know it is a multi-year deal. Speaking of contracts, Fred Warner has reached an agreement with the 49ers on a 3-year $63 million extension that makes him the highest paid off-ball linebacker in the NFL. This is the 2nd time that Warner has signed an extension that made him the highest paid linebacker in the league. Very well deserved for him. For over 65 years, Ted Britt has set the bar for the best car buying experience in the DC area, hands down. Ted Britt Ford Fairfax, Ted Britt Ford Lincoln Chantilly, and Ted Britt Chevrolet Sterling, all home to Ted Britt for Life, lifetime vehicle coverage, and all of that is just a click away at TedBritt.com. From the Crop Medcap 5-Star Sports Desk, Savannah McCann on The Fan.
Podcasting isn't just evolving, it's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.